This is The Artist's Response with Elizabeth Stewart, and you're welcome to join us. Please stay tuned for a program produced by Richard Dugan and researched and presented by Elizabeth Stewart, who welcomes the great artists of our community. What follows is a conversation of an artist's experience about the artist's response to trying times, creativity, reinvention, recovery, and of course,
hello, Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, time. Elizabeth Stewart. I did a lecture with Northern Trust and a wonderful woman, Kelly M. Anderson, who's an attorney and a tax nerd, self-described tax nerd. And we had a ball. And I said, Kelly, I want you to come on the program because the kind of stuff we talked about, Richard, it's really valuable for anybody of any income level. And so what I want to just give a quick pricey shout out. We're going to talk a little bit this hour about your finances in regards to two topics. The contents of your estate in art and antiques and collectibles, that's an important part. We're going to talk about how to think about those things as assets. What kind of assets are they? How you plan for those assets? And we're going to talk about how appraising and valuing fits into that whole picture.
Elizabeth, let me throw one thing in there, if I might. Sure. What if someone such as myself, who is not a conscious collector of any of those elements, may have inadvertently throughout his or her lifetime actually accidentally or otherwise managed to acquire some of these elements that you've described?
So that's a good question for Kelly. We're going to ask Kelly in a minute, but we'll ask Kelly now. So now I'm going to put the question differently. So Kelly, you have a trust, let's say, there's a couple, they have a trust and both pass, and someone like me comes in, and it's a type of appraisal, Richard, that we do for an estate administration. Mm-hmm. It's called a 706, and Kelly would order me to do this procedure where I'm doing the valuation for the estate, because the heirs now are going to inherit surreptitiously anyway. So Kelly says, okay, Elizabeth, go in and do an appraisal. Think of it in terms of a 706. It's a certain type of format. And I discovered there's something that mom always thought, she got it at an estate sale, Kelly. Mom always thought it was a Picasso, a print. It had nothing to do. It was a lithograph. And, it was not of any value at all. And I discover it's one of his editions of Jacqueline, which is one of his wives. And he only made 7 in that edition. And it is a screen print. Once I take it out of the glass, I can see that it is a screen print, and it is signed on the back, which is very untypical of Picasso. But nevertheless, it is signed, and it is also numbered in the edition. So let's say it's 3 out of 7. Now, Richard's the heir in this case. And I say, well, look, your mom inadvertently, as Richard said, picked up a Picasso. How do you look at that, Kelly? Now, let's just say that Sotheby's, the last Jacqueline they sold was $96,000. Okay, so how do we explain that to Richard?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and it happens, right? We see often that when mom and dad pass, or when somebody passes, and the beneficiaries who may not have full insight or knowledge into all of the assets that were in the estate or that are coming to the beneficiary. So they're kind of coming in a little bit blind. So this is not an uncommon situation, Richard, that you describe. And in fact, that's one of the things that we did talk about, Elizabeth and I, at our lecture, was this opportunity to pre-plan. My catchphrase is planning is a verb. It's an ongoing process. It never stops. You might have a will or a trust in place, but that doesn't end the process right there. It's it's an ongoing, as things change, as life changes, asset changes, you keep up, you continue to update, you continue to look at it. And one of the steps is in planning is having an inventory of what your assets are, and perhaps even sharing that with your beneficiaries, so that they're in a better position to know what they're going to receive. So that's, you know, that's kind of what we talked about, and I think we're gonna be able to use this show to explore that idea a little bit more. But let's say, like in your situation, Richard, you didn't know, it just happened upon you, and that's where it becomes important that now you are that person, Richard, that. The burden, unfortunately, is going to be placed on you. Fortunately or unfortunately, is going to be placed on you. You now need to be the one to start engaging in the planning. You have this valuable asset. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to protect it? Are you going to keep it? Are you going to look to liquidate it? Is it something that you're going to want to turn into your family's legacy or create as part of your family's legacy to be passed on to generation. So for you, that becomes a, hey, let's have a conversation or broader conversation with your advisors, your attorney, with Dr. Stewart, who's doing your appraisal of what do I have and what are my options for it? And if I'm going to liquidate it, here are the options for that. If I'm going to keep it, do I put it in trust? Where am I gonna, you know, who am I gonna manage it for? Where am I going to store it? How am I going to insure it? Those are the type of questions that your advisors would go through with you, so that you can start your pre-planning and planning process right from the get-go and prepare your beneficiaries prepare yourself and prepare your beneficiaries for, you know, so they're not in the same situation that you found yourself in.
So let me just ask a little further, because Richard, I want to take your question a little further with Kelly. So let's say Richard needs that 96,000, and I'll just give you, you know, the indication. We know that mom bought it in an estate sale, and let's say what we're going to talk about is capital gains, Richard. But anyway, so let's say mom she bought it for $20, and Richard needs that 96K. On the other hand, the second part of that question would be, he'd like to sell it, and let's just make it easy. There's no other heirs, and so how would you advise? What would be the parameters around which you talk to Richard?
I would first make sure that Dr. Stewart, you or somebody's around who can speak towards the art market and how to go through that process. I personally have never been through a sale in the public markets or at auction, and that, you know, that comes with its own advisory metrics. What are the costs for that? What's the timeline looking for? Richard, your liquidity needs, is it immediate? Is it long-term? Are we going to be able to meet or match your expectations for when you're going to receive the cash and how much you're going to receive after costs? Is there going to be a tax element? It sounds like it won't be in these limited sets of facts, because this came to you from a death. And by virtue of Dr. Stewart doing the 706 appraisal, you're going to receive a step up in basis, which means that it's going to be equal to the fair market value. So when you sell it, there will be no no gain. But nevertheless, if there's a long time that goes through and there's an event and the piece of artwork appreciates greatly, maybe we do have to have a tax discussion with you about how that might impact you. But those are the kinds of things that that we would be talking about is timeline. Your expectations on timeline, your expectations on the amount of money that you receive, and your expectations on the process, the commitment and the process to go into the art market and sell it.
So Richard, what Kelly is talking about in my language, okay, so you've inherited this Picasso, it's 96,000. And Kelly would say, okay, Elizabeth, we need you to do an analysis of what that market looks like, because Richard doesn't want to take a loss on this, because Richard, we said Richard needs the money now. So if he needs the money now, how desperate does he need the money? In other words, are we going to sell when the Picasso market has shown that it's kind of like plateauing? Or is Kelly going to say, look, Elizabeth, we need you to find that. I mean, Richard really needs the last dime. So we really need you to find the market in which the chances of Richard getting all that 96,000 is really high. But then, Richard, you say to me, well, look, Elizabeth, if it's $86,000, it doesn't matter. I have a debt I need to pay. Mm-hmm. So now we say, well, okay, we're going to take a risk here. We're going to sell in a market that's a little wavery. And what you would be doing with someone like Kelly would be to take a look at that whole picture. You know, okay, it's a wavery market, and here's the debt we have to pay. Is it worth it to pay the interest on the debt, say, for example, and keep that and look at the market that's going up for Picasso? So we're planning on when to sell and how to sell. And Kelly mentioned that, oh, she's going to say, hey, Elizabeth, are we going to sell privately or are we going to sell at auction? Are you, Richard, did you want to sell at auction? Do you want to sell privately? What do you think would be the difference?
If the market is good for the Picasso, I'd probably go to auction. I think I might get more at an auction with people bidding, those who would be interested.
Yeah, there's the competition angle. Mm-hmm. That's a really good point. But there's also the commission angle.
Oh.
So at auction, if it's over $100,000 takeaway,
mm-hmm.
you know, their commission is pretty darn low. It can be like 5 to 8% that that's all you're paying out of what the proceeds are. If you sell for privately, and it's a down market, and the gallery is saying, we're not all that happy with selling for you anyway, and it's a lot of time, and the market's not so good. Sometimes they'll take 50%.
Ouch.
Yeah, but if you're desperate for that money, and they've got a buyer that they can go to tomorrow at auctions, it'll take a good 3 to 6 months for a property of that value to come up to the block. Yeah.
I need to make a payment on this stadium behind me.
Yeah, exactly. If you need to settle that debt, you might say, look, it's worth it to me. I need $40,000 and I'm going to go with the gallery because they'll liquidate it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what Kelly is saying is, and why we thought we'd do this hour, by the way, she and I, is there's a lot of moving parts involved with various expertise. But you need somebody like Kelly at the helm of the ship so that Kelly can say, okay, now we're going to order an appraisal. Now we're going to look at the whole package. Now we're going to look at you selling at a gallery versus an auction, that Picasso. And then what we're going to talk about when we get back from the break, Kelly's going to say to me, or say to you, Richard, about your Picasso, you know, what if we did something different with that debt? And what would it look like if you donated that work? Mm. And what would it look like if you felt really strongly about the Santa Barbara Art Museum and you really wanted to donate that work? What would that look like? And what kind of effort would it take? What kind of risk would it take? And how much would that hurt vis-a-vis the debt you have?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, let's talk about that very quickly, because there's always, when Kelly and I were brainstorming about talking about this mm-hmm. topic, there's the where to sell, how to sell, who to sell with, and then do you sell at all? Do you retain? How do you decide to retain? Or do you say, I really would like to donate? How do you decide to donate? So when we get back, and it's really interesting that there's someone like Kelly in our community, because I have worked with a lot of different planners, financial planners, and I was so impressed with Kelly because what she's doing is she's thinking along the whole line. She's mm-hmm. not just saying, yeah, okay, here's the debt. Let's take $96,000 and let's sell and blah, blah, blah. And that's it. She's thinking through things,
mm-hmm.
which is really quite rare. And what she's trying to do is say, what would be in your best interest? You know, okay, what would it look like? Also, if you predeceased Amrita, what would that look like in terms of Amrita inheriting a property now, let's say with the art market increasing, it's $120,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So let's talk, we'll talk quickly about that when we get back from the break. And you know what I didn't do? I didn't ask Kelly to introduce herself. So when we get back from the break, we're going to start with Kelly and doing her really interesting background. And she is in the community, by the way. She's here in Santa Barbara. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I'm speaking with Kelly M. Anderson, who's a financial expert with Northern Trust here in town. And Kelly, please introduce yourself. I'm sorry.
Yes, and thank you. Well, we just got right into the conversation. It was so interesting. So, that's what happens, and that's kind of what my job is. My technical job title is wealth advisor, and I'm at Northern Trust, and I sit in the Montecito office for Northern Trust. And as a wealth advisor, I'm very fortunate that I just all day get to talk and have conversations and discussions with families about their estate plan, their wealth plan, their goals, their objectives. What are they trying to accomplish? I mean, we address questions like, how much will my kids receive and when will they receive it? Do I owe estate tax? How do I plan for assets on my balance sheet, such as art? Are my charitable provisions still appropriate? The topics that we talk about are just as diverse as what the definition of artwork is. And so every day is a new adventure and a new ways to strategize around exactly how you said, Dr. Stewart. There's many different goals and intentions that are always at play. There are many different assets at play. What's the best way, or what are the various options to achieve those goals and objectives in your current and your overall, your long-term estate and wealth plan?
So some of the things that, come to mind, that perhaps if I would say, okay, you're going to, a client of mine, you're going to be speaking with a wealth manager such as Kelly, what kind of questions would you ask around your art? What would Kelly need to know to help you kind of make a decision about what you want to do with the art? So, a quick checklist might look like this. It might be, what's the purpose of this meeting? Are we going to talk about heirship issues, estate issues? Are we going to talk about selling objects before you leave the planet? Are we going to talk about donation? How does that all fit together? Mm-hmm. And then things that you might want to think about to come prepared to talk with a wealth manager such as Kelly. You might think about, when was the art purchased, or when did you inherit it? I mean, Kelly, I think I told you I did this appraisal of a large collection that was going to a museum from someone here in town. And the heir, for some reason, could not find and did not know Dad's accountant, had no real connection with Dad, could not locate the 706, had no idea. That's the 706 is that form that says this is what things are valued when you leave the planet. So it was important that we have a date of death valuation for his dad, but we didn't. And yet he wanted to donate the entire collection to a museum that he had inherited. And so we were kind of thinking, well, how do we figure that one out? Because there's no valuation. We don't know what he's donating. So it would be, when was the art purchased or inherited? Mm-hmm. What has it been owned for more than a year? That's an important thing to think about. Has the art been owned for more than a year? The other thing that Kelly needs to know, and might be a really good thing to find out before you meet with your financial planner, what's the condition of the artwork? Because if you and Kelly decide, look, you're going to donate the artwork, one of the big important things that the IRS looks at, because of course you're taking a donation so you can take that against your taxes. But the IRS has a big column on this form which goes along with the appraisal for donation. What's the condition? They want to see they want to know the condition. They actually have asked me for conservator's report or some of the more expensive works of art, because there's been all these tax law cases, Kelly, where they're like, okay, taxpayer, here's a nice photo, but it doesn't show the big hole at the bottom. It's been doctored up, you know, which devalues the piece tremendously. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, condition, who's, what conservator do you know, restorer do you know, who will be receiving the work if you're donating? That makes a difference too. You want to mm-hmm. be careful about, so you want to talk to Kelly about these things. You want to ask her, what will it cost me to retain the work in, as far as insurance? Because she needs to know, that A, she needs to know that things are insured if they're over a certain value, but B, she needs to know, the relative value of something that's going to be insured, because it's a different valuation that we're using. So we're using replacement value, and we're not using fair market value like we would in an estate administration proceeding. Anyway, Kelly, before we go to quick break, please tell me about your background.
You know, as the wealth advisor, those are the types of conversations I have. And to my background, I am an attorney and accountant by background. I spent my career prior to joining Wealth Management Northern Trust, practicing law and preparing tax returns, including some of those 706 returns, the estate tax returns. So I'm well familiar with some of the arguments and taking on the IRS a little bit in my previous job. So it's a good point to bring up. And, just to comment real quickly, I know before we have to go to break, but just to comment real quickly on and summarize what you just brought up, Dr. Stewart, which was a lot of information. When you talk to a wealth advisor or a financial advisor, you know, we're going to be looking at cash flow, because let's face it, cash flow is the most important question for many, many families. And it's, do I have enough for me, for my lifetime? And then after that, what is left over that I could benefit others, where it's a charity or my heirs? So that's where our conversation is going to come around. And art is just one of many assets that we talk about when we're trying to figure out, do I have enough, and of my excess, what are my options for my excess? And those are the ways that we take the conversation, not just for art, but for any assets. So I think we can go more into that a little bit later.
So I would love to have you talk about a question that I've always had, is loaning to a museum. A lot of my clients ask me, what would be the advantage? You know, is there what we call fractional interest? Would Kelly advise me to loan to a museum or to promise to a museum? So I have a client that they worked out with their wealth advisor that they're going to make sure the Met gets this work, and they promised the Met this work, and it's a $3 million work of art. They promised the Met they'd get this work. In the meantime, they didn't want to really pay for insurance, to be honest, Kelly. And they said, look, could even though we're not ready to give you the work, we're going to loan you the work. And they showed the work, the museum, the Met showed the work. So I'd love to hear you reflect on that, because I myself didn't know what to advise them on that. Yeah. So I'd love to have your yeah. Richard, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Okay. And you know, Richard, it's really interesting you bring up that Kennedy silver dollar, mm-hmm. because there's certain coins that have appreciated astronomically, and I'd love to take a look at that coin for you.
Sure.
Because you know, you may not even have to think about the social getting involved with Social Security 2 years early if we find out that coin is worth something. Anyway, don't turn that dial. Back in a minute. I'm talking this hour with Kelly M. Anderson of Northern Trust. A forward-thinking, really interesting woman that is in our community that I was super impressed. She got her teeth into the idea of art as an asset class, and asked me to come and help discuss this question about art as an asset in a whole portfolio of assets. And she just knows so much that I was so impressed. I said, Kelly, you got to come on the air and talk about these various angles. A lot of people don't know that when they're amassing a collection, it's the interest in their collection. They're not thinking this way at all. And then, you know, we don't want to leave it to the heirs to work out these really thorny issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's why I said, Kelly, we need to talk about this on our program. Don't turn that dial back in a second. We're going to talk about loaning to a museum and promising to a museum and what that looks like. Even if it's not a great work of art, you could still donate. And we're going to use the example of a $3 million work of art, but, you know, you might have a piece that's an $8,000 painting and you want to donate, and there's ways to think about that. There's ways to think about donation of a print that's $2,000. You know, so let's talk about that when we get back from the break. Speaking with Kelly M. Anderson of Northern Trust, attorney and self-avowed tax nerd. Love it. Don't turn that down. Welcome back. Great pleasure to talk with Kelly M. Anderson, who is going to be in the future my go-to person for financial advice for sure. She's with Northern Trust, and we got together to do a lecture a month or so ago for people that were interested in art as an asset in their portfolio. And Kelly was interested in the topic because she is counseled clients in our community. It's one of those things. She and I were talking about this. You can kind of expect it, that the certain type of families will have a kind of a really interesting and valuable collection that they may not even know is valuable. But this is a community that is devoted to creative endeavors. And so we thought, wow, we're really going to, you know, talk about this too. And we had a huge crowd. We had a lot of people that were really interested in talking about how art fits into their plan. You know, and what are the distinguishing characteristics of art that has appreciated was another topic that we want to get into this hour. But my question, let me put the question again, Kelly. You've got a family, they're a wealthy family, let's say, and they've got a painting and its fair market value is $3 million. Its replacement value is $4 million. They're not sure in these days where people are dropping clients in the Santa Barbara market for insurance. They're not sure they want to pay that premium. And they know the Met wants it. They know the Met's asked to have it on loan. They're not ready to give it yet. And they know when they do give it that they can take the body of the gift against their gross in that year. But they're not sure they want to do that because this isn't the right year, let's say. How do you advise them? I mean, I guess my question would be, how do you know when the right year is? They do want to donate. And is there some kind of good news about loaning?
Yeah, and I think the question comes, you know, and the discussion with the family who is approaching this question is, you know, ultimately, who will benefit? Which, if I heard from you, and we would talk with the family, that you know, eventually, that the long term goal or the intended ultimate beneficiary is a charity at some point. But the second question then is when? When will they benefit? And you know, very often the conversation we have with families are, yes, we want to give this to charity, or even we want to give this to kids, but you know, we're not ready to take those paintings down off of our walls yet, or we want to be able to enjoy them during our lifetime a little bit more. We haven't quite hit that mark. So that comes into play because, you know, and everything's about taxes. Yes, the tax deduction is fantastic. And we can run the analysis. We can do some modeling to find out when is the best time to take that tax deduction. Is there a year where you're expecting a lot of income? And if that's the case from some other sale, then maybe that's the year that we again approach the question of, well, is this the year that we make that full charitable donation to get that deduction to offset the income? That becomes part of the conversation. But in the meantime, if we're not in a situation where the tax deduction is important or relevant or powerful in a particular year, and we do have that non-financial aspect of, hey, I want to keep this artwork, I want to continue to enjoy it, then you do have the ability to look at other structures to provide you with some benefit, like you discussed, that the loaning to a charity. And what that does is provided we can work out a loan agreement that, you know, terms that you agree with, but you do kind of ship some of the expense. So it's kind of like a shared expense of the insurance, the storage, the care to this charity who's going to be absorbing some of that while they're hanging the paintings. You get some of that charitable aspect because you are benefiting the public by allowing this painting or this artwork to be shown. And in the meantime, you still have the ability, whatever the terms with the charity, the loan agreement, to get that artwork back you know, at the end of the term or during periods of the term, something you can work out for when each of you has physical ownership or physical control over that painting, so, or that artwork. So the loan to a museum option becomes a great option to talk through if, again, your beneficiary is a charity is one of your potential beneficiaries, and if you're in a situation where now is not the right time for financial or non-financial reasons to make an outright gift to charity.
So is there a tax benefit to loaning a piece to a museum?
There could be. There could be a tax piece because, again, you are making a public benefit. But it's going to be, it's a bit more of a complicated discussion to bring in an accountant to help you with that or an attorney to help you with that, because it is really going to depend on the terms of your loan agreement. And the fact that it's coming back to you may negate a lot of that. So I wouldn't do this going into, there may be a small charitable deduction. There may be a way to work out a small charitable deduction. But I would not go into this thinking I'm doing this for the charitable deduction. It's more of a, I'm doing it to alleviate some of my cash flow planning for like the insurance expenses and things like that. Or the storage expenses, that really is my primary goal, on top of the fact that I'm not really interested in giving this up just yet.
So again,
there may be a way to structure it so that you can get something, but it wouldn't be equivalent at all to the amount you could get from an outright or a full gift. So that's not really, should not be the priority.
Right. Okay. So, and here's my other question around that is, so we know that a loan is not going to benefit us greatly, but now we're talking about donation and we're going to have this appraised for donation purposes. Mm-hmm. Now you say, look, you don't really need to take the donation in this year. I was under the impression before you and I met, I was under the impression that you could take that deduction in equal increments for 5 years going forward against your taxes. But the way I understand now is you take the majority in that year you donate, and it's not a matter of equal increments over 5 years. Am I right?
Can I clarify, Dr. Sweet, you're talking about making a full gift to charity?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've taken this painting and said, here you go, the Met. It's yours. Congratulations. Yes. Okay. So in that situation where you're just making an outright gift, the full deduction becomes available to you, whatever that amount is, whatever you qualify for, that it vests, it becomes available to you the year you make the deduction. Now, if you can't use the full deduction in that year, for example, maybe you don't have enough income in that year to absorb the full, you have some left over. The one nice thing, here's something where the IRS actually gives you something. They tell you, you have 5 years to use it. So if you can't use it all this year and you have some left over, look next year. If you have extra income next year, you can use the rest of your charitable deduction to offset. So that 5 year period comes into, it's not equal over 5 years. It's take as much as you can, as quickly as you can. And if there's left over, you have 5 years to use up the remainder.
That's where I was wrong. I was thinking about this, that you had to sort of divide it up. If it was 5 mil, it was a mil a year, but no, it's not that way. And it was really interesting when you were talking during our lecture about the sort of planning in that regard. The interesting thing is, though, we're talking about that situation of donation versus selling versus inheriting versus, mm-hmm. So there's all these verses. And for example, if you're selling and there's a lot of capital gains in the piece, mm-hmm. how you think about that versus the other three scenarios we were just talking about, that I'd love to have your opinion on that. Because a lot of folks in our community, they collected because they liked an artist, they liked something, mm-hmm. and they're shocked when they find out, what it's worth today, that they've had it for, say, 25 years, and they're absolutely shocked. And that actually is depressing in some cases for them to hear, because they don't know what to do with that. So I'd love to hear you talk about that a little when we get back. Hey, Richard.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Okay, let's go to quick break. Just reintroduce, I'm talking with Kelly M. Anderson of Northern, she's a Northern Trust Wealth Advisor. And we had so much fun talking with a room full of interesting people the other night about how to think about your art as an asset and how you look at that in your whole portfolio, and how an accomplished attorney and I keep on saying this, self-avowed tax nerd, how they think about a client's art. And when we get back from the break, I want to talk about how Kelly would think about a work of art in a client's portfolio that has increased greatly, let's say 200% over a period of 20 years, how she would think about that and what the impact would be if they're looking. And Kelly's really forward thinking. Like I said, she's saying, what's your intent? What do you want to do? Is it a cash flow issue? Is it a contribution issue? Is it your heirs? You want it to stay in the family? What's your eventual goal? Let's assume that their eventual goal is to maximize the asset portfolio, and not necessarily the sale of it, turning it into cash. Not necessarily that, but what would be their most advantageous route if they had a work of art that had increased greatly over 20 years? Love to hear that. Rich, let's go to quick break. We'll get back from the break. This is a lot of fun for me because these are questions I've always wanted to ask. Don't turn that down. Back with Kelly M. Anderson of Northern Trust. Welcome back. Speaking with Kelly M. Anderson of Northern Trust, who's a wealth advisor here in town. She's in the Montecito office. I put a question to her that I've always wondered about. I have a work of art, let's say, and I bought it 20 some odd years ago, and it has increased 200% over what I paid for it. And so I'd like to have Kelly's opinion on what my options would be to, and I don't need the money, but let's put another little piece of information in here. I don't need the money, but the odds of this increasing much more are not strong, because let's say that Kelly's hired somebody like me to do that analysis, and it's a style that is not necessarily going to be favored because it's had its day. So let's say that that work of art has, we were talking about top of the market, is at the top of the market now. So we've got that scenario, Kelly. Tell me what you think. How would you advise?
Well, first of all, we would definitely take an overall balance sheet approach. I know we're focusing on the art here, but we want to make sure that we're looking at the overall balance sheet, everything that's on your balance sheet, all your assets, to make sure that we are making the right decision. One of the, you know, when you talk about selling and you're at the height of the market, so you're thinking, if I correlate this to stock, which I think a lot of people are familiar with, when stocks are at the high, you want to sell, right? So does that hold true in the art world? And maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I think there are differences. If you sell your artwork for a large gain, so you bought it low and now it's at the height of the market and you're selling it, there is a very unfavorable tax that's going to be due on that. And it can be a punishing tax. It's not at the favorable low tax rate that, you know, the 20% that we normally hear about for capital gains. Artwork is treated special because it is a special asset class. So it's going to be taxed typically in the 28%. 28% tax rate more often than not. There are exceptions to that, of course. So that's a hefty tax sometimes to absorb. So we want to take that into consideration. Can you absorb it? Do you have other deductions that might ease that tax burden? For example, maybe you can sell a piece. Maybe there's another piece you can donate and get a charitable deduction to help you offset some of that. Mm-hmm. So that is a major consideration when we're talking about going to sell any type of asset, artwork and specifically. So then it becomes, well, let's go back to who do you really want to benefit from this piece of art? Is this something that you want to give to your children or create some kind of a family legacy to your beneficiaries? Because if that's the case, or if you have an idea in mind that you want your beneficiaries to receive this percentage of your estate, maybe that artwork is a better piece to hold on to and to distribute to your beneficiaries as part of your estate, you know, when the time comes far in the future, hopefully, because by holding it until you're passing, you're going to eliminate that tax burden through what we call the step up in basis. So that tax burden ends up being resolved of its own. So that's another consideration to come into play. But, you know, charity also is another thing that I think about when you have a highly appreciated asset that maybe you don't want to keep anymore. Maybe you don't want to pass it on to your children. It's not going to be part of your legacy of other assets for that. This might be an object that we look to donate to charity, which again is a tax preferential move and might be the better option. So it's an overall looking at everything. What other pieces do we have in play? What are your overall goals and intentions? What are the myriad ways, the puzzle pieces we can put together to meet those goals and intentions regarding this artwork and in context of your overall plan?
I think that is a really interesting point, and it's a point that a lot of people don't think they can understand, which is if your basis is high, with limited or no appreciation, it would be a wise move to think about selling. And the opposite is true. If your basis is low and you have great appreciation, it might be super interesting to think about donating. As Kelly said, you kind of need somebody to steer the ship on this, because what you're doing is you're looking at, well, if I do this and then that has impact on this and it has an impact on that. As regards to my spreadsheet, you know, so, you know, these are things that are part of owning and curating and being a good steward of a collection. And a lot of people don't think about that in terms of their stewardship. How that comes down through the family is super important if that is an intention. And I like to point out to clients that they don't really have anybody like Kelly to advise them. I say, look, all the great collections of the world are named with somebody's last name. It's because they did go through this advisory process. you know, the Broads, the great museums of the world, even the Smithsonian. Mm-hmm. It comes down to that person thinking it through, thinking their collection through. Kelly, thank you so much for talking with me about this.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed this and hope to keep involved with you, Dr. Stewart. Thank you.
Definitely we will. Thanks, Kelly.